You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect. Dr. Fitch, I'll be here assisting in today's diagnosis, which is a very scary place to be, but it's also a very hard thing to breathe in. It's a good thing that, you know, they don't wear these when they're trying to do something important, like surgery or something. They do. Anyway, I wanted to share some things with you. I actually shared these a number of years ago. They're kind of funny. And just some actual definitions to... does anybody else feel like claustrophobia happening right now? Okay. All right. I want to share some actual definitions to you from some medical terms. And these are... All right, seriously. I'm not claustrophobic, but I'm feeling a little... mental, facial, breathing pressure. And I can't find the thing that I'm dying. It's okay. I'll just keep going, and if I pass out, you'll know why. So first of all, some words I want to define for you. These are medical terms. Artery. An artery. This is the study of paintings. So just so you know that. Thank you, baby. She's like, I love you too much, honey, to die. Yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, if you're listening online, I am still alive. I have not passed out, just in case you didn't figure that out by this point. So another word here, cesarean section. This is a neighborhood in Rome. A neighborhood in Rome, okay? You're getting with me here? Okay, cauterize. You thought it meant to burn a wound or something like that, but it actually means to make eye contact with her. Because you cauterize. Okay, good. All right, good. I'm feeling it here. All right, dilate. Dilate has nothing to do with pregnancy. It just means that you didn't die early. You lived long, so you died late. Then finally here, well, there's actually a whole bunch of them. Let me go faster here. Anatema. Of course, you think this means something unfortunate, but it is, because it's someone who's not your friend. They're your enema. How about a fibula? A fibula. It is a perhaps a bone, but you're wrong. A fibula is just a small lie. It's a fibula. It's not a big lie, just a small lie, a fibula. Labor pain. Labor pain. I think this whole word is a myth anyway. That's just me. I've never experienced any labor pains. Now my wife is going to come back up and tie it back onto me and make me pass out again. But labor pain, this actually is getting hurt at work. That's what a labor pain is. Morbid. Morbid. You might have heard the phrase morbid in medical terms. And that just means someone is given a higher offer. That was more morbid. Nitrates. By the way, well, don't use this if you're taking nitrates for chest pain. We won't talk about what the this is. But anyway, nitrates. This is actually just cheaper than day rates. Nitrates are cheaper than day rates. A node. A node is you know, part of your body, you thought, but it actually just means you were aware of something. Oh, I knowed that. Outpatient. This, of course, was about to be me if I hadn't taken the mask off, but that is a person who has fainted. A patient who has fainted is an outpatient. Recovery room. This is important if you're into remodeling, because this is where you do upholstery. In the recovery room. Recovering. You cover. Okay, all right, good. We're living here. Caesar! Of course, this is the Roman Emperor. Terminal illness. Terminal illness. He thought it means, you know, kind of a sad diagnosis here, but it actually just means getting sick at the airport. That is a terminal illness. And then urine is, of course, the opposite of you're out. So I'd like to see umpires use that. Baseball season is upon us. And you're in! maybe not so much. But here's the thing about a doctor. You want a doctor, okay? You want a doctor that doesn't care about your feelings. Let that sink in just for a moment. You want a doctor that doesn't care about your feelings. Because if you had a doctor that cared about your feelings, and I'm for real here, if you had a doctor that cared about your feelings, they might say things to you that will make you feel good, but that may not be the truth. And sometimes a doctor will have a diagnosis or some things that they know, and it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt to hear it. And if you had a doctor that was just interested in making you feel good, and like, well, I don't want to hurt their feelings, so I'll just tell them everything's fine. And of course, that would be a lie, and that would be deceptive. And especially, say your doctor, you went to the doctor, you had some tests performed, and it turned out you had a terminal illness. You had a condition that was going to cause you to die. However, if you did a few simple things, perhaps changed your diet, perhaps exercised more, maybe you just ate a little green pill, and that would solve it. But the doctor thought, you know what, if I tell them that they've got this condition that could end their life, they might get upset. They might get sad. They might not want to hear that. That would hurt their feelings. So your doctor says, you know what? No, you're fine. You're good. Don't worry about anything. And as much as you would love to walk away going, hey, I'm fine. I'm good. If that's not the truth, you want to know the truth. Even though the truth might hurt, you want to know the actual diagnosis. Because when you get the actual diagnosis, then you can begin working towards the cure. Then you can be working towards fixing the problem. And so that is why you don't want a doctor that's interested in making you feel good. You want a doctor that's interested in telling you the truth. Now, they can do that in a nice way. We call that bedside manner. You know, there's some ways that can be done. But you don't want them to spare your feelings for the sake of truth. You need to know the hard truth. And so today we're in week 3 of this series called Burn. And dude, if you were here last week, it was depressing. It was sad. It was rough because hell is a real place. And that's what we're talking about all month. And it was an awful thing. And I hate to say this to you, but it's not getting any better today. Today is not going to be any better. And I'm unfortunately going to have to confront you with the real truth of our diagnosis. The real truth of what is going on. And I could say, you know what, hell, as we talked about last week, I'd say, well, it doesn't really exist. It's not a real place. I could say, oh, that's only for really bad people, like Hitler and Stalin, because we always pick on Hitler and Stalin. But you're cool. No worries. You're fine. Go ahead. Everything's okay. But that wouldn't be the truth. And I think when it comes to this idea of hell, again, last week we kind of talked about this idea of ignoring it. If I don't look at it, if I pretend that hell isn't real, then I don't have to worry about it. And this kind of ties into it this week, this idea of well, you know what? Maybe it's real, but I don't really, it's not really my problem. I don't really have to worry about it. I'll just, you know, just make me feel good. And I'm not going to make you feel good today. And I'm just going to give you a little spoiler. You're going to hell. Okay? We'll find that out by the end of this morning. You're going to hell. And we'll talk more about what that looks like. But that's the real truth. That as a human being, you are on your way to hell. And again, if you were here last week, hell is an awful, horrendous, real place of eternal horror. And that was the point that we talked about, a burning darkness, constant, continuous anguish. And your diagnosis today is that you're on your way there. And I could spare you from that real truth. And I could say, hey, you know what? It's all good. Don't worry about it. That's just for people that are really bad, you know, like the person next to you or the person that cuts you off in traffic. You know, if you cut someone else off in traffic, no, you had a good reason. But if they cut you off, they're going to hell because they're really bad. And I just want you to know that the truth is we're all on our way to hell. And so the point today is this. The reason for hell is sin's destination. The reason for hell, the reason hell exists is because it is the destination, it is the end goal, it is the final point for sin. So, that is what I want to drill into us today. And again, if you walk out of here a little bit sad, a little bit discouraged, a little bit challenged, then I'm okay with that. And I just want you to know, too, if for some reason you do have a terminal illness, and in the next 10 minutes, you know, that's it for you, that there is actual hope. That we're not done here. If you have to leave suddenly for some reason, there is hope. But today, the diagnosis is pretty grim. The diagnosis, the issue, is that the destination of hell, the destination for sin is hell. So we're going to turn the house lights on here. If you have a Bible, paper Bible, you can certainly turn to Revelation chapter 20. If you have the YouVersion app, and we'll be talking about YouVersion again this morning, it's just tap on Revelation. It's all the way, just swipe all the way to the bottom. Or is that to the top? I can never tell which way you swipe. But Revelation is the very last book. Tap on Revelation, tap on 20. And we're going to be in verses 10 through 15. So, this is written by the Apostle John, not to be confused with John the Baptist, because he was dead. He was decapitated, beheaded. And you can learn all about John the Baptist in our Less of Me series, which we covered, about a year ago spring. You can find that at mc3church.org. But this is the Apostle John, a different John, and he wrote this book based on a vision that God gave him about kind of what is going to happen. And we actually did a series last summer called Messengers, where we looked at the first two chapters of, second and third chapter of Revelation, and some messages that Jesus had given to these different churches of John's time. But here we are in chapter 20. And so John is writing this vision of God, what God showed him about what is going to happen at the end. And in verse 10, he says, "And the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of burning sulfur, where the beast and the false prophet had been thrown. They will be tormented day and night forever." Again, going back to last week, day and night forever, burning sulfur, eternal fire. He says, "Then I saw a great white throne and him who was seated on it. The earth and the heavens fled from his presence, and there was no place for them." So this him is Jesus on this throne. That is, at this point, if you had read the context up to this point, you know that this throne, Jesus is sitting on this throne. And he says, "And then I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne, and books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. The dead were judged according to what they had done as recorded in the books. The sea gave up the dead that were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead that were in them, and each person was judged according to what they had done. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire. The lake of fire is the second death. Anyone whose name was not found written in the book of life was thrown into the lake of fire." So this idea here, basically John and Jesus speaking through John, showing him this vision of what's going to happen at the end. And as we said last week, hell is a real place. Hell is an actual location, and it is a place of eternal torment and pain and suffering, and it is a real place. And here he's talking about who's going to end up there. What's going to end up there? And so he shares the final destination, which was a movie series, I believe, a whole bunch of different movies about these people that try to avoid dying. But the final destination that we're talking about here is the final, final destination. This is the end. And so I want to talk about how this passage, John shares a few things that will end up in hell. Hell is the destination for, the first thing is Satan and demons. Satan and demons. And that's what the first verse of that passage says, that Satan and demons will end up in hell. That is their destination. That is where they will be. We actually did a series a number of years ago called Christianophobia. And we talked about angels and demons. And we actually talked about end times, which I'll reference that in a few moments. But in this, we learned that Satan is simply an angel. A bad one. A demon is a bad angel. They are created beings, and Satan is kind of the head of them. And we don't have time to get into all that, but you can listen to it online if you want to. Again, it's called Christianophobia. But at the end, Satan and his angels and demons will end up in hell. And that's what the first part of the verse says. And the devil, the Greek word is diabolos, which is just another word for Satan, who deceived them, was thrown into the lake of burning sulfur, where the beast and false prophet had been thrown. They will be tormented day and night forever. One of the passages we looked at last week from Matthew chapter 25 said how hell is prepared for the devil and his angels, for the Satan and demons. So in the end, Satan is going to lose. In the end, Satan and demons and all of that awful sin stuff from an angelic perspective is going to be in hell, and they will be in this lake of fire, and they will be tormented day and night forever. So that's the first thing. Cool. Yay. Good. We're glad. Satan, demons going to hell. That's where they belong. And of course, this kind of wrecks some of our perspective too, of like, you know, Satan currently being in hell with his pitchfork and his horns and his red tail. And like, that's great if you're Tom and Jerry, or whatever, you know. They don't have that in cartoons today, do they? Like, that's too scary and violent. But that's not the reality. Satan is active and present on earth. He is not in hell yet. And let's just even say he's deceived because he thinks that he's going to win. But that's a separate thing. But we know that the destination for Satan and demons, they're going to hell. That's where they're going to end up at the end. They will be put in hell and tormented forever and ever. So great, we're excited about that. The second group of people that are going to be in hell are sinners. Sinners. And that means people who sin. People who do wrong. And of course, this is the diagnosis that would be easier to say, oh guys, look, you're fine. You don't have anything to worry about. Good. And if I knew the cure and didn't tell you, would that make me a good doctor? But you would feel good about it. Because hell is the final destination for sinners. And that's what he goes on and says here in 11 through 13. He says, then I saw a great white throne. So here, this is his vision of heaven. And of course, this is a vision. So there was this great white throne, which was a sign of royalty. We know that throne, we get that idea. And the fact that it was a great one, a white one, like there's something about this wasn't just a regular throne. This is a big deal throne. And him who was seated on it. And so Jesus is seated on this throne. And he is so amazing that earth and the heavens, which basically means that all of this created stuff, fled from his presence. Like, it didn't mean that, like, earth was like, hey, I'm out of here, packed up his bag and took off. No, like, it just means his greatness was so incredible that even this, like, everything that we experience here in a physical place, like, it could not be in the presence of Jesus. And so there was no place for him. Then he goes on and says, I saw the dead, great and small, so standing before the throne. Great and small, so everybody. It's not like, oh, he didn't say, I saw the dead, especially those that were in charge of the Holocaust, but not the ones that were really nice to other people. It doesn't say that. Great and small, all of them, dead. The dead were now arisen, if you will, and standing before this throne. And books were opened. So these books, and we don't have time to get too much into this, but these books essentially are a record of life. They're a record of your life, of everyone's life, of these dead people, and what they have all done. And so that's what these books are. The idea actually, the Greek word is like volumes. They kind of have this idea of just this history of all the different people and all that they have done throughout the years. And I think there's a Doctor Who episode along those lines. But anyway, so there's this book that kind of carries everything. And then it said there was another book open. And the Greek word another doesn't mean like, yeah, there's like six and now there's seven books. This word another means it was a completely unique, totally different type of book. It was still a book and still a record of something, but it wasn't the same kind of book. It wasn't just the thing. It was a completely unique book. And this was called the Book of Life. And so you've got these dead, all the dead are now standing before this throne, great and small, everybody. So you got Hitler there, you got Mother Teresa, and now we can say you've got Billy Graham there. All these people are there before this throne. The books are open, and you've got this book of all the records, and then this book of life. And then he goes on and says, the dead were judged according to what they had done as recorded in the books. Now, I'm going to add a little bit of theology, and we're going to really unpack this next week. But basically what he's saying is that according to what people had done, as written in these books, so all the lives of all these people, and so there seems to be an idea throughout Scripture that the worse, and work, stay with me here please, the more sinful you are, the greater your punishment may be. That seems to be a trend you see in the Bible. That so Hitler, who is pretty bad, at least outwardly, is probably going to be judged more severely. His punishment may be worse. I don't know how you make eternal horror worse. I don't know. But that's assuming one other thing here that I don't know, and you don't know either, frankly. But so it seems that the dead, all these people are going to be judged according to what they had done. And so if they were kind of bad as a sinner, they're going to be in hell. And they're a fairly good bad person. So maybe their torment isn't going to be as completely horribly horrendous, even though it will be completely horribly horrendous, as this person who is, say, a Stalin or a Hitler or something like that. So you're with me so far. So it's all going to suck. But some people, it's really going to suck. And so here's these people being judged according to what they had done. And stay with me on this, please, because there's a very important distinction we're about to make here. But let me continue the passage. It says, the sea gave up the dead that were in it, and death and Hades gave up the dead that were in them. And so the sea is referring to the fact that people that have died while they were in a shipwreck, or maybe they've died at sea in battle, or a pirate took them away. And, so there's all these, and there's a metaphor here, or not a metaphor, but an actual, the dead people that were in the sea appeared. So it wasn't just like those people that died on land. It was the dead people that were in the sea. And then it says, and death and Hades gave up the dead that were in them. And so we talked about last week, this word Hades is a Greek word that means the grave. And so basically what John is saying, what this vision is that basically everybody dead everywhere, whether they were in the ocean and died there, or they were in the grave, in Hades, that's what the Greek word means. And if you weren't here last week, you can listen to this online at mc3church.org, where we talked about the distinction between some of these words. Everybody that was dead, no matter where they died, no matter where they were here. And each person was judged according to what they had done. So, sinners, bad people, bad things. Yeah, I did some really bad things, so I'm getting here. You did some kind of bad things, but you're still here. You're still suffering. It's still awful. And then you've got really, really bad people over here. You've got Hitler and Stalin and Jeffrey Dahmer. And if you know anything about Jeffrey Dahmer, he was a man that killed many people back in the, I believe it was the late 80s into the 90s. And then he actually ate them. He kept them in his fridge. He was a serial killer. He stabbed his oatmeal. Every day? No. He was a person, and he an awful man. Well, watch. So, these people are being judged according to what they had done, based on these two sets of books. These sets of books here, and then this book of life. This completely unique book. And it says, anyone whose name was not found written in the book of life was thrown into the lake of fire. So now, all of a sudden, there's a switch here. Because the sinners, and I'm just totally spoiling next week a little bit, but there's this idea that there's these two sets of books. Well, one set of books and one book. And the books are opened. Everybody's brought before Jesus at the end. And the book of life and then these other books. And these other books are the records of all the awful things that people have done. And there's this book of life that were people that chose to believe in the death of Jesus that took the punishment for their sin. That Jesus died for them and took the punishment. So all these records over here of all these things that they had done wrong, I can't confirm this actual fact about the books, but I'm suspecting that if your name was in the book of life over here because you believe that Jesus died for your sins and he took the punishment that you deserve, that your name is not over in these books. Because Jesus took the punishment for your sin. No matter how awful or kind of awful or really awful you were, Jesus took that whole punishment. And we're going to talk more about this next week, but I just want you to understand that. So there's these books, and if your name was in the book of life, then you get to go, let's just say, heaven for now. But if your name was not in the book, you were judged according to everything you had done in this world. How horrible, how awful they are. So, Mother Teresa, I don't really know. Billy Graham, I'm going to guess, fair amount of certainty, that his name is in the book of life. I don't know his heart. I can tell you my name is. How about that? And I can tell you that I've done some pretty rotten things. I'm probably not up here with Hitler. Probably not here with Jeffrey Dahmer. But it doesn't matter because Jesus took the punishment for my sin. And again, I'm totally spoiling next week. We'll talk more about this next week. But I just don't want you to walk away here thinking that you, as a follower of Jesus, if you believe in Jesus, you are not going to be judged for the things you've done. Because I remember hearing that in youth group. Like, oh, God's going to open the book and you're going to be crying before Jesus. Because he's going to see that time you cheated on the test. And when you looked lustfully at that girl, he's going to be upset at you. No, he's not. Jesus took all of that in him on the cross. If he's still upset, then that is not perfection. That is not the same at all. Jesus died for all those things. So, ready? You've got these bad people. Go back one second for me. Where were we? Yeah, there we go. You've got all these kind of bad people being judged, and then you've got this really bad guy, Jeffrey Dahmer. Guess what? He, near the end of his life, chose to believe in Jesus in prison, shortly before he was killed. And all of these horrendous and horrific things that he had done, Jesus took. And because his name was in the book of life, he is going to be in heaven. He is going to be in eternity with Jesus and not sent to the lake of fire. Chuck Colson, if you guys have heard of his name, he was one of the ones that was a part of sharing the gospel, sharing the message of Jesus with Jeffrey Dahmer. And so you might say, but that's not fair. And you're absolutely right. None of it is fair. None of it is fair. And we're going to go into that next week. Next week we get to have some fun. Next week we get to be happy. Next week we get to celebrate because of what Jesus actually has done for us. But that's the issue here, is that you've got these sinners that are going to... am I cutting out? You've got these sinners that are going to be in front of these books. And for anyone that it wasn't in the book of life, they're going to be in hell for eternity, tormented forever. And so anyone that is a sinner is going to be a part of that, unless their name was written in the book of life. So the diagnosis is a sinner is that we're kind of in trouble. So the final destination for Satan and demons is hell. The final destination for sinners is hell. And so Satan and demons, sinners, and death, which is kind of a cool thing too. We like this one. Like, even eternity with Jesus is going to be so amazing and so wonderful, and eternity apart from him in a real place called hell is going to be so awful. But even death itself is sent to hell. Like, God's like, I'm done with this thing. We're not going to suffer. We're not going to have pain. We're not going to have sickness. We're not even going to have to worry about death. Even death is going to die because of what Jesus did for us on the cross. And so at the end here, and this is what he says there in the last part, then death and the grave were thrown into the lake of fire. The lake of fire is the second death. And the reason they use this phrase second death is this idea of we die physically once. All of us will die physically once, most likely, unless Jesus comes back, and that's a whole other topic for another day. But then we're going to have a step. For those that do not have their name written in the book of life, those that are not followers of Jesus, those that are sinners and stuck in their sin, not forgiven. We talked about that the very first week of this series. If we're not forgiven, then we're sinners. And if we're sinners, we're going to hell, and even death is going to be there. So that's the final destination. The hell is a destination for Satan and demons, sinners, and death. So, first of all, actually, just a side note here, as I said a moment ago, we did a series called Christianophobia, and we talked about some different things, different kind of fears that Christians have, followers of Jesus have, like, oh no, and one of them was about this idea of end times, and so we did a week called Armageddophobia, and looked at basically what I just read in that one passage. We kind of unpacked that whole thing. So if you want more, if you want to know more about that, you can go to mc3church.org, click on Listen to the Point, and then find that logo. And Armageddophobia was the very last one in that series. And there's actually a timeline that I made that you can look at and just listen to it and get some more information. So I opened some cans of worms there, certainly when you talk about the beast and the false prophet. Like, what is all that? Go there and you can get more about that. So, let's review a little bit. The very first week of this series, 3 weeks ago, we talked about on Easter Sunday that the effect of hell was Jesus conquered. And we said that this whole hell thing, this awful thing that we've been talking about all month, Jesus conquered it. He won. It is over. We just haven't gotten to that point yet. But Jesus already won. Hell has been defeated. He rose from the grave showing that he won, that even death couldn't hold him. And that's what Easter is all about. And so that's what we looked at the first week. And again, it was sort of a spoiler. And then next week, we're going to talk about how this all works together. But then last week, we got a little bit more depressing. And we talked about the reality of hell is eternal horror. And that it is a real place. And we can't just pretend, well, as long as I don't see it, it's not there. No, it is a real place. If we believe that the Bible is true, then you have to believe that hell is a real place. And here's the thing, too, and I said this last week. You know, we love to talk about heaven. Well, if heaven is a real place, what's the alternative? And again, you can listen to that online. So that's where we've been. And now we're at this week, the reason for hell is sin's destination. So we've got this horrible place, and sin is going to end up there. And sin, as we talked about before, is this idea of, you know, God has this perfect design for us, this perfect plan, this perfect idea of obeying and following him because it's what's best for us. And anytime we choose to disobey that perfect bullseye, we miss the mark. And that's what the Greek word says. The New Testament was written in Greek. That's what the word sin means, to miss the mark, to hit something outside of the actual target. And that is sin, and that is what sends us to hell. So, I want to just raise briefly a typical question. I want to be real about this stuff. A typical question that comes up when we talk about sin, when we talk about hell, when we talk about evil, and just the things in this world. And the question is this. Why isn't sin in hell now? Like, why does evil exist? Why do good and bad happen? Why do bad things happen to good people? And I hate to spoil it, but you're not a good person. Sorry. But we have this question. Why is this? Like, I mean, is God not able to do it? Like, what's going on? Why is it that God allows evil to exist? Now, first of all, last week we talked about the parable of the wheat and the weeds. And we actually briefly, I kind of glanced right off of this, but this idea that there was this wheat that was sown in this field, and it was good wheat, it was appropriate wheat, it was the wheat of people that are following God. But then weeds were stuck there by an enemy. And the farmer said, you know, the worker said, should we pull it all up, or pull up the weeds? And he said, no, if you pull up the weeds, you'll pull up the good stuff too. And the quick principle of that would be God saying, okay, you know what? There's sin. Let's just destroy this whole thing and start all over. So the question is, why isn't sin in hell now? If that's its destination, why can't God do it now? Why doesn't God do it now? Why do we have to suffer? Why do we have to go through some hard things? And I am just going to briefly cover this, and I'm going to acknowledge it's out there. It's a question. It's not an easy question. And I don't know the perfect answer for this, but there are some things that I can tell you with certainty that I do know. And that's what I want to talk about here just for a few moments. Again, and if you want to explore this more and chew on this and question me about it and talk about it, let's go for it. But I don't want to be like, oh, everything's fine. What? There's nothing bad here. What? No, they're good. Huh? What's that? Because it's It's part of what's going on. There is sin around us. Things suck. Things are hard. There is death. There is sickness. Why hasn't God done anything about it? So let me tell you four things that I know. First, here's what we know. And that is that God is just. God is just, which means God is perfectly 100% all the time fair. All the time. He doesn't play favorites. He doesn't change his mind. He is perfectly just. I don't know if you've ever, if you guys remember playing games in the schoolyard or in the park or whatever as kids, but there was always that one kid, and I don't think I was that kid, but I may have been, that, you know, he'd be like, okay, we're going to do self-pitch wiffle ball. You know, you throw it up and hit it, and everybody gets three tosses. Oh, whiff. Oh, well, those first two didn't count because my thumb was in the air. So I'm adding and changing it right now. One more. Okay, well, it was the wind. So I'm just going to start all over, okay? And you know what I'm talking about? Do you guys remember people that would change the rules in the middle of the game? Like, come on, no, these are the rules. And some of us look at the NFL and like, come on, referees. Is this a rule or is this not a rule? Is that a catch or not a catch? And it looks like at the owners' meetings they're trying to fix that problem. If you don't know what I'm talking about, that's okay, Kara. Oh, she's upstairs. But you know, we don't like when the rules change, especially if they've explained. Well, God doesn't do that. God is perfectly just. He doesn't change the rules midstream. He doesn't change the way it works. He is going to come through on the things that he said he's going to come through. And we're going to talk more about this next week. Because of God's justice, Jesus had to die. So, but we'll come back to that next week. But in Deuteronomy 32, this is just a passage here that talks about it. Moses is saying that Jesus, or God, he is the rock. His deeds are perfect. Everything he does is just and fair. Everything. He is a faithful God who does no wrong. How just and upright he is. The Bible is clear. God does not change his mind. God doesn't change the rules. He doesn't change the way the things operate. If this is wrong then, it's going to be wrong now. It'll be wrong forever. So God is just. We know that. That's one thing that we definitely know. And so we look at that and say, okay, well, we know that sin isn't good. Sin is bad. And sin requires separation from God. So why isn't sin dealt with now? Good question. Let's talk about what else we know. We know that God is able. We know that God has the power in this instant to completely destroy and wipe out sin. Whatever he wants, at any moment, he can choose. He has the power to do anything that he wants. And that's what Jeremiah 32 says. Jeremiah says, he's reading, he says, I am the Lord, the God of all peoples of the world. Is anything too hard for me? And that was what you call a rhetorical question, because the answer is no. There is nothing that my God cannot do. God can do it all. So, if God has the power, and God is just. So now we've got some pieces that are coming together in this puzzle. So, we know that God is just. God is always going to follow the rules, his rules that he set up because he is perfect. And he's not going to change those rules. And we know that he is able to destroy sin and to wipe out sin in an instant. So far, why not? And the third thing is we also know that God is sovereign. And now this is the word sovereign is just a fancy word for one who was a king. We'd call them a sovereign. And a sovereign was the one that was in charge of the whole kingdom. Now in our era today, like we're like, yeah, they do this, you know, and you know, then we get all excited about their weddings and what, like that's not an actual kingdom. Sorry, England. But an actual kingdom meant the king is in charge. The king does what the king does, and the king does whatever the king wants. And sometimes, as we look back in our Word 3 series a year ago, sometimes the kings are bad kings. And everybody suffers because of it. But the idea of a sovereign, of a king, is that they're in charge. And they see the whole picture, and they have a big plan. And that's what God has. And in Ephesians 1 here, it talks about how he sees the whole picture. Paul is writing to this church in Ephesus. He says, God has now revealed to us his mysterious plan regarding Christ, a plan to fulfill his own good pleasure. So I don't have time to get into all this, but at the time of writing, the Jewish people were looking forward to a Messiah, to a Christ, to a person that was going to make things right. And now Paul is writing like, yeah, we know about this Jesus now. So he's revealed him to us. A plan to fulfill his own good pleasure. And this is the plan. At the right time. When is the right time? We don't know. Why? Because we're not God. We're not sovereign. We're not eternal. We don't see the whole picture. We don't know what the plan is. So at the right time, in the next two words, he says, he will. It's not at the right time, God's going to try. Or maybe he'll be able to work things out. Maybe he'll solve this sin issue. No, at the right time, he will. And we actually, there's a passage in Galatians that said at just the right time, Jesus came to this earth. And it talked about how, and we did a whole series on this, talking about how Christmas was a perfectly timed event in the stage of history. Because that's exactly when God wanted it. So we can trust this idea of at the right time. It says he will bring everything together under the authority of Christ. Everything in heaven and on earth. Meaning all of it. All of it. And I guess one thing we should say is that when we understand heaven today, we think of it like angels and harps and clouds and eternity in a good place. And that's not wrong. Well, the angels and harps and clouds. Everything but the eternally part. But when a biblical writer, most of the time, when they would talk about heaven, most of the time, they meant just the stars, the universe, like physical earth, physical space. We would call it the universe. We would call it the stars. We would call it outer space. They didn't actually get to space yet. They hadn't done the Apollo launches or Sputnik or anything like that. And so they were referring to this idea. So basically, all of the stuff that we know is going to come under the authority of Christ. Furthermore, because we are united with Christ, we have received an inheritance from God. For he chose us in advance, and he makes everything work out according to his plan. So we also understand here now that God is just. He's always going to make things work out. He's not going to change the rules. If bad is bad, bad is bad. If good is good, good is good. If there's a punishment for bad, then punishment will happen. We also know that God is able, that he can make all this stuff happen. We also know that he is sovereign. So he sees things in a different way than we do. We might look and say, God, I want this now. And God says, no, you don't. And he says, if you get what you want now, you might miss out on what I've got for you later. And so this idea of God's sovereign, he says, he sees the big picture. He knows what's right. If I got the first girl that I kissed, we're not even going to get into all this number of kissing issue. People bring that up all the time, 30, whatever. Anyway, but if I got that person, I would have totally missed out 30-some kisses later on my wife. And I thought I got what I thought I wanted what I got, but instead I got what I needed, and it was just wonderful and all that. And so that's this idea of God's picture is bigger, and we don't quite get all these things. And so we need to understand that God is just, God is able, God is sovereign. We know those things. And then here's the really cool part. And that is that God is patient. God is patient. And this, I think, is the key to the whole thing. Because if God truly wiped out sin, all of us would have been wiped out. We wouldn't even be here, let's be honest. It would have happened in the garden thousands of years ago. Adam and Eve sinned. Done. But the Bible says that God is patient. He takes his time because of his love. And I don't know about you. I am a completely patient person. I will wait forever. What? You haven't cleaned up your room that I asked you? We've got weeks, Jack. Get around to it. It's all good. Your house isn't going anywhere. What? It's not time to eat yet? Oh, I don't need to eat. I'll just wait. I mean, no, but God is patient, and his patience is love. He's like, because I love you, I'm going to wait. Because if I did it now, we'd be done. But he says, I love you enough to give you the chance, to give you the opportunity for my son to come and die so that you have hope, you have purpose, you have eternal life, the offer of life. And that's what in Nehemiah chapter 6, we look at this passage, or sorry, chapter 9, we look at this passage back during the wall series and of this idea of the celebration of the wall when they're reflecting back on all that God has done. And Nehemiah writes and says, but our ancestors were proud and stubborn. They paid no attention to your commands. They refused to obey and did not remember the miracles you had done for them. Instead, they became stubborn and appointed a leader to take them back to their slavery in Egypt. And he's referring to the time of the Egyptian slavery and all of that, and that they turned their back on God. He had miraculously brought them out of Egypt, out of slavery in Egypt, through these 10 plagues, through the crossing of the Red Sea. They're out there for a few months, and they decide, nah, we don't want God. We're going back on them. And at that moment, God had every right to be like, that's it. Done. I am done with you. I am tired of you. You are not following me. You are not obeying me. You are not listening to me. You're not doing one thing that I asked you to do. And he's not just a human parent. He is the perfect holy God. And God had every right to be like, done. Dead. But he was a patient God. And that's what Nehemiah goes on and says. But you are a God of forgiveness, gracious and merciful, slow to become angry, and rich in unfailing love. Those are good words for us. Those are words we need to let sink in. We don't deserve it, but he is a good God, slow to become angry, rich in unfailing love. And that last line is just beautiful. You did not abandon them. And that's the story for us too. We don't deserve it. Why are things awful right now? Because God is patient. He's giving us the chance. He's giving us the chance to experience his grace, to experience his forgiveness. He didn't abandon us when he had every right to do that. And in Genesis chapter, I don't have this on the screen, but in Genesis chapter 3, right after Adam and Eve, and they ate the fruit, and Satan had tempted them. Right after Satan tempted them, then they eat the fruit and disobeyed God. And God had said to them, look, don't do this or you'll surely die. And they did die in a sense because of that first death. They began, physical death entered the world. And of course, that was Satan's temptation. You won't die. Did God say you surely die? I don't know why he talks like that. But that's the way that snake talked that day. In English, believe it or not. all those years ago. And they ate the fruit. And then God had every right to be like, done. That's it. And there's this really cool verse, and I'm not going to read it right now because we just don't have time. But in chapter 3, right after this whole, all this bad stuff happened, in verse 21, it talks about how it says, then God killed an animal and clothed them. And it was the beginning of this idea that something had to be sacrificed because of their sin. And because of the sacrifice of that animal, they didn't have to die. Now, they were still kicked out of the garden because they couldn't be in the presence of a holy God. We'll talk more about that next week. But God was patient. And even then, something died so that they didn't have to. And that's the beginning of this story. So, why isn't sin in hell right now? Because God loves us too much to say, I'm done with you. Get out. Because he's just. It's going to happen. He's able to make it happen. He sees a bigger picture. And he's patient. And there's way more attributes. We did a series called 3, where we spent, I think it was week 2, we spent the whole morning looking at, I don't know, maybe 24 attributes of God. But these are some things we know. And so that, again, is it a perfect answer? No. Does it say, oh, this is why? No. But it does explain some things to help us understand why things are bad right now. And it's going to sound kind of weird and almost masochistic, but it's bad now because it's going to be good later. Because there is that hope. So, let's carry on here with the point. The reason for hell is sin's destination. A good doctor is going to give you a true diagnosis, especially if the good doctor knows the cure and knows how to fix it, but they ignore it and you just die. There, that's called malpractice. And so as a pastor, as a leader, as one who has studied the Bible and has at least some level of personal, well, not some level, a real level of personal relationship with Jesus, I want to share the diagnosis. And the diagnosis is this. The truth that you need to take to hit you between the eyes is that you are going to hell. That is the truth. You are going to hell. Like, I'm so glad I came to MC3 today. Woohoo! All right. You're going to hell. How do we know this? First of all, we know that everyone is born a sinner. Everyone is born a sinner. Romans 5:12 puts it this way. It says that when Adam sinned, He was our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great- Adam sinned, sin entered the world. I just said that a few minutes ago. Adam's sin brought death. I just said that a few minutes ago. So death spread to everyone. For everyone sinned. As a physical descendant of Adam. And stay with me here. And if you're not going to be here next week, please, please, please listen to the point online next week. Because this is we're setting next week up a little bit here. So death spread to everyone. For everyone sinned. We are all sinners. We are born sinners. We are. It's part of our inheritance. It's part of our genetics. It's part of our DNA. We are born as people who are born sin. No one had to teach you how to sin. They may have taught you how to sin in inappropriate ways when suddenly your little five-year-old yells out a word that you didn't think they heard you yell out when you hit your thumb with the hammer. So sometimes we do teach them to sin, but no one had to say, okay, now this is how you disobey. And this is how you throw a fit when you don't get what you want. And this is how you throw your food off the table if you don't like it. No one had to teach you that because we're born sinners. We're all sinners. So, diagnosis, you're going to hell. Everyone is born a sinner. Second thing, everyone has sinned. Everyone has chosen to disobey God. We have chosen to do things that are not honoring to God. How do we know it's honoring to God? Well, His Word is full of it. But this idea of let's just say in general, we know that what bad things are. We know that lying is a bad thing. We know that cheating is a bad thing. We know that abuse is a bad thing. Like this, we understand that. And in Romans chapter 3, Paul writes this to them. And Romans is a really good passage, a really good book about all this. He writes to this church in Rome. He says, everyone has sinned. Everyone has sinned. And we all fall short of God's glorious standard. Everyone is in that same spot of eating that fruit that Adam and Eve were. And so therefore, we are out. We are not able to be in the presence of a holy God. Outside of the presence of a holy God, what is that? That is called hell, an eternal torment. Everyone has sinned. We all fall short of God's glorious standard. And let me be clear here, people. I don't care where Hitler is, or Stalin, I don't know, I mean here somewhere. I don't care where Jeffrey Dahmer is, or Billy Graham, or Mother Teresa, or Sean Fitch. We're not graded according to everyone else. We're not graded on a curve. Sin is a pass-fail issue. You either do it or you don't. There is no curve. There is no, well, compared to them, I'm pretty good. So what? They're just as much going to hell as you are because they have sinned. That's the issue. It's not a graving on a curve. It's not a percentile thing where like, well, according to the people your age and your demographic area, they have sinned a little bit more than you, and therefore you are a better person and you will go to heaven. No. It's either yes or no. And I remember, I've shared this, I remember with students years ago, the idea of, you know, if you had a water bottle and that water bottle was brand new, just opened from a locally, well, they don't make bottle, they don't do bottled water anymore. But anyway, from a brand new place, That's you know, and I were to go out and with our cute little puppy and his little poo-poos all over the yard, and if I were just to take little tiny tweezers into his little poo-poo, just a tiny, 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 tiny amount, and drop it in that water bottle, swish it around a little bit, and then give it to you to drink, would you drink it? Probably not, because you're like, but it's contaminated. And I'd be like, okay, it is probably like 99.9999% pure. But that's the whole point. That's exactly how sin works. It's either is or it isn't. And so everyone has sinned. So, everyone has sinned. It's not pass fail. It's not compared to everyone else. It either is, you either have sinned or you have not. And I don't think you have not. I think you have. And the Bible says you have. And then the third thing we know is this. Every sinner goes to hell. Yay! Everyone's born sinner. Everyone has sinned. We've committed acts that are wrong. And all it takes is one. And every sinner goes to hell. He says, Paul writes in Romans 6:23, the wages of sin is death. Today is April 15th. Are wages on your mind? If you're like, what does he mean? You're going to go home and go, oh, crap, today's tax day. Wages, like, what are wages? Wages are what you get for what you do. The wages of sin is death. Death eternally. Eternal death. The second death. Because of our sin, we are going to hell. We are going to die. As we looked at that passage earlier, it said that the lake of fire is the second death. Matt Parko, can you hear me? Give me a thumbs up. Can you hear me out there? The Greek word, and we're about, Kirk, we're about 2 weeks away here, Josh. The Greek word for death is thanatos, where we get this word Thanos. And in a couple of weeks is the next Avengers movie, which is the Infinity War, and it's all about Thanos and how he comes and destroys everything, I think. I haven't done it, but thanatos, the second death. Death, that's what this word means. And so all of us as sinners are going to hell, the second death, the thanatos, because of our sin. That is what we earn for it. All it takes is the percentage. We're born that way. And so that's what we've got. Everyone is born a sinner. Everyone has sinned. Every sinner goes to hell. And here's the, like, okay, that's cool. I'm down with that. I'm just going to be really good and get back. I'm going to get in. I'm going to be really nice. I'm going to even give money. I heard about that offer series that MC3 is doing. I'm totally giving like 3%, 3.5%. God is going to be cool with me, and I'm going to get my way back into heaven. I'm going to be really nice, even to the mean neighbor. And I'm going to do nice things. And that guy at work, I'm going to smile at him. And I'm not even going to say mean things to him. I'm going to stop posting those notes on his back that say, kick me. I'm stopping that. God is going to be cool with me, and I'm getting back in. Unfortunately, we can't earn our way back. You can't be good enough. You can't do it. You can't do it, Nemo. You can't. In Romans 3:20, Paul writes this to the church in Rome. He says, "For no one can ever be made right with God by doing what the law commands." You can't do enough. You can't be good enough. You can't get back into your rightness with God by doing it. The law, and that we're referring here specifically to the Old Testament commandments, oh, I follow all 10 of them. Do you even know what they are? And do you also realize that there's way more than 10? The law shows us just how sinful we are. Like, we realize, wow, we can't do this on our own. I'm not good enough. How do I get to heaven? I can't. And this idea, and I don't know if you guys, I mean, it's baseball season now, a batting average, you know, a perfect hitter bats what? 1,000, a batting 1,000, and that is perfection. Every time they're up to bat, they get a hit. And if a hitter hit 999 hits and then struck out, they would now be batting 999, which is a really good batting average. But as soon as they have that strikeout, no matter how many thousands of hits they get after that, they're never going to be able to get back to perfection. Their batting average will be 999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999 I know something. Because you never get back. And that's the whole point with sin. We can't get back. We can't be good enough. We can't earn our way back. And Paul is saying, look, you can't be good enough. You can't earn it. You can't do it. And we're like, what? What do you mean? If I can't do it, how am I going to get back there? And the point being is that we need help because we can't do it on our own. And we're going to stop there. We can't do it on our own. We can't earn our way back. Sinners are going to hell. You and I are sinners. And the diagnosis is hell. And next week, I'll share the cure. Next week, we'll talk about what that looks like. But understand that we can't do it. We're not good enough. The reason for hell is sin's destination. All of it. All of the awful things, all the awful people, all of that sin is on its way to hell. And we've been doing something here with YouVersion. If you have the YouVersion app, we'll just quickly tap on it. There we go. There's a plan called Erasing Hell. We've been reading together as a church. I know tons of you, I mentioned this last week. Today, a bunch of you are finishing that plan. But if you want to do it once a day, if you want to do it once, you know, every couple of days, you know, in the course of the next series, it's a 7-day reading plan talking about some of these ideas that we've been talking about all series long. And I just encourage you, if you have the YouVersion app, if you don't have it, it's free. But get it and just read together with the rest of MC3 as we're going through this reading plan about what hell is. But the point is that we can't do it on our own. We need help. The diagnosis is not good. It is grim. There is a cure. But unfortunately, you're going to have to wait a week to hear what that is. Or maybe you can ask someone around you because they might know too. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you so much for your word. And I thank you that this idea of evil and your patience and your justice and your goodness and your love, that all these things work together and that you're not done with us. Thank you that hell is an awful place and we don't have to go there. We don't have to find that our destiny. Thank you that is where sin will be. And I pray as we've looked at these ideas and we've chewed on some really hard things and it's easy for us to want to feel good and not talk about it. But I pray that you would just challenge us, whether we're following Jesus, whether we're not, to really just chew on this and to be a little bit frustrated and a little bit angry and a little bit sad and a little bit desperate. No, a whole lot bit desperate, God. And I thank you that we're not done, that we're not alone, that you did not abandon us, but have provided the cure for our diagnosis of eternal hell. Help us to see this, bring all these pieces together, God, in our hearts and our minds, so that we may find ourselves not going to hell, but may we find our names written in the book of life. It's in Jesus' name, who died on the cross, taking our sins, that we pray. Amen.